Before we begin, I need to mention that this entire episode, including both voices you're hearing, is completely AI generated. Today's fictional sponsor is ClearThink Pro, an imaginary app that claims to organize your scattered thoughts into actionable plans. And please remember that some information in this episode may be inaccurate, so do double-check anything important to you. I'm Sarah, and today we're diving into Freud's Mass Psychology and Other Writings with Dr. Marcus Chen, a clinical psychologist who specializes in group dynamics and social behavior. Marcus, this isn't exactly beach reading material. Why should someone in 2024 care about what Freud wrote about crowds over a century ago?
That's the fascinating thing, Sarah. We're living through an era of social media mobs, political polarization, and viral movements that seem to take on lives of their own. Freud was trying to understand why rational individuals become something entirely different when they join a group.
So this book isn't just historical curiosity. It's actually relevant to understanding modern crowd behavior?
Absolutely. Freud built on Gustave Le Bon's work on crowd psychology, but he brought his psychoanalytic lens to it. He wanted to know what psychological mechanisms make individuals surrender their critical thinking to group mentality.
What was Freud's background that made him qualified to tackle this topic? I mean, he's famous for individual therapy, not group behavior.
By the time he wrote this, Freud had spent decades studying the unconscious mind and how people's rational thoughts get overridden by deeper psychological forces. He realized that groups might operate like individual psyches with their own unconscious processes.
That's a bold leap. Was he responding to specific events of his time?
Definitely. He was writing in the aftermath of World War I, having witnessed how entire nations could be swept up in destructive collective behavior. He wanted to understand how civilized people could participate in such barbarism.
What problem was he trying to solve that others hadn't addressed?
Previous thinkers, like Le Bon, described crowd behavior, but didn't explain the underlying psychological mechanisms. Freud wanted to know why groups seem to regress to more primitive psychological states.
So he's bringing his clinical expertise to bear on social phenomena. What's his main argument about how groups actually function?
Freud argues that groups form through a process he calls identification. Individuals don't just follow a leader, they internalize that leader as a substitute for their own ego ideal.
Can you unpack that? What does it mean to substitute a leader for your ego ideal?
Think of your ego ideal as your internal sense of what you should be, your moral compass. Freud says that in groups, people replace this internal guide with the group leader or the group's values.
So they're not just following orders, they're actually changing their sense of right and wrong?
Exactly. That's why group behavior can be so powerful and so dangerous. It's not just conformity, it's a temporary restructuring of personality.
What evidence did Freud offer for this theory? How did he support this claim?
He analyzed two specific types of groups, the army and the Catholic Church. Both have clear hierarchical structures and demand total identification from members.
Why those two examples specifically?
They represent different types of authority. Military authority is based on discipline and fear of punishment. Religious authority is based on love and devotion. But Freud argues both work through the same psychological mechanism.
That's interesting. So he's saying love-based and fear-based groups operate similarly at a psychological level?
Right. In both cases, members give up individual judgment and adopt the group's standards as their own. The soldier follows orders without question. The believer accepts doctrine without doubt.
But how is this different from what thinkers before him were saying about crowd behavior?
Earlier theorists focused on emotional contagion, the idea that feelings spread through crowds like infection. Freud goes deeper, arguing that group formation involves unconscious psychological processes rooted in our earliest family relationships.
Family relationships? How does that connect to group behavior?
Freud believes that group psychology recreates the dynamics of the primal family. The leader becomes a father figure, and group members become siblings competing for the father's approval.
So groups tap into these very early, pre-rational psychological patterns?
Exactly. That's why rational argument often fails against group psychology. You're not dealing with conscious reasoning, you're dealing with unconscious emotional attachments.
Let's get practical. How does Freud say this process of identification actually works? What are the specific mechanisms?
He describes several stages. First, individuals must be willing to give up their individual ego ideals. This usually happens when people feel uncertain or threatened.
So vulnerability makes people more susceptible to group psychology?
Yes. When people's normal psychological defenses are weakened, they become more open to identifying with a group leader or ideology.
What happens next in this process?
The second stage is what Freud calls libidinal ties. Group members develop emotional bonds not just to the leader, but to each other through their shared identification.
Can you give me a concrete example of how this plays out in real life?
Think about a political rally. People arrive as individuals with varying concerns. But as they participate in chants, cheers, and shared rituals, they begin to feel emotionally connected to both the leader and fellow supporters.
And according to Freud, they're actually changing psychologically during this process?
Right. Their individual critical faculties become subordinated to the group's perspective. They might accept claims they'd normally question or support actions they'd usually find objectionable.
That sounds pretty dramatic. Does Freud think this is always a bad thing?
Not necessarily. He recognizes that group identification can serve positive functions. It can provide security, meaning, and social connection that individuals desperately need.
So, it's a double-edged sword. What determines whether group psychology becomes constructive or destructive?
Freud focuses heavily on the nature of the leader and the group's aims. A leader who embodies positive values can elevate group behavior. A leader who appeals to primitive instincts can make groups regressive and dangerous.
Let's explore another key concept. Freud talks about regression in groups. What does he mean by that?
Regression means reverting to earlier, more primitive forms of psychological functioning. In groups, people often abandon sophisticated reasoning and fall back on simpler, more emotional ways of thinking.
Can you walk me through a specific example of what this looks like?
Consider online mob behavior. Individuals who normally engage in nuanced discussion can quickly resort to name-calling, black and white thinking, and attacks on anyone who disagrees with the group consensus.
So social media might be a perfect laboratory for studying these dynamics?
Absolutely. The anonymity and distance of online interaction can accelerate the regression process. People feel less individual responsibility and more group permission to act in ways they normally wouldn't.
Freud also discusses something called the narcissism of minor differences. What's that about?
This is one of his most insightful observations. Groups often define themselves not by what they believe, but by what they oppose. The smaller the actual difference between groups, the more intense the hostility can become.
That seems counterintuitive. Why would minor differences create major conflicts?
Because group identity requires clear boundaries. When two groups are very similar, they have to exaggerate small differences to maintain their distinct identities. Think about feuds between very similar religious sects or political factions.
So the intensity of group conflict isn't necessarily proportional to the size of the actual disagreement?
Exactly. Sometimes the most vicious conflicts happen between groups that an outsider would see as nearly identical.
How does someone recognize when they're caught up in this kind of group psychology? What are the warning signs?
Freud suggests looking for signs of reduced critical thinking. Are you accepting claims without your usual skepticism? Are you feeling intense hostility toward people you previously respected?
Those seem like things that would be hard to notice in yourself when you're in the middle of it.
That's the challenge. Group psychology often feels completely rational from the inside. The emotional satisfaction of belonging can override the awareness that your thinking has changed.
Are there practical strategies Freud recommends for maintaining individual psychological autonomy?
He's more diagnostic than prescriptive, but he does suggest that understanding these processes can provide some protection. Awareness of group psychology can help you recognize when it's happening to you.
Let's talk about implementation. How would someone actually use these insights in their daily life?
Start by paying attention to your own reactions in group settings. Notice when you feel pressure to conform or when your opinions seem to shift based on who you're with.
Can you give me a specific scenario to work with?
Sure. Imagine you're in a work meeting where everyone seems to be agreeing with a proposal you have doubts about. Instead of immediately going along, pause and ask yourself whether you're responding to the group dynamic or your own judgment.
What would be the Freudian approach to handling that situation?
Recognize that the pressure to conform might be triggering unconscious needs for approval and belonging. Understanding that can help you separate your actual opinion from your emotional need to fit in.
That sounds useful, but also really difficult to do in the moment.
It is. That's why Freud emphasizes that these are unconscious processes. Bringing them to consciousness takes practice and often feels uncomfortable because it means questioning our sense of belonging.
What about when you're trying to understand group behavior from the outside? How do you analyze what's happening to other people?
Look for signs of identification and regression. Are group members adopting similar language, dress, or behaviors? Are they becoming more extreme in their positions over time?
Give me a concrete example of what to look for.
Watch how people talk about their opponents. If formerly nuanced individuals start using dehumanizing language or can't acknowledge any validity in opposing views, that suggests regression is occurring.
How long does it typically take for these group psychological processes to take hold?
Freud doesn't give specific timelines, but he suggests it can happen quite rapidly when conditions are right. Strong emotions, shared experiences, and charismatic leadership can accelerate the process.
Are some people more susceptible to group psychology than others?
Freud implies that everyone is susceptible under the right circumstances, but people who feel isolated, uncertain, or threatened may be more vulnerable to the appeal of group identification.
What are the most common mistakes people make when trying to apply these insights?
The biggest mistake is thinking you're immune. People often use Freud's insights to analyze others while remaining blind to their own group identifications.
So self-awareness is harder than it looks?
Much harder. Another common mistake is trying to argue with people who are deep in group psychology using facts and logic. Freud suggests that's often ineffective because you're not addressing the underlying emotional needs.
What would be more effective?
Understanding what psychological needs the group is meeting. Is it providing security, identity, or meaning? Addressing those underlying needs might be more productive than attacking the surface beliefs.
If someone only takes away one practical tool from this book, what should it be?
Learn to recognize the feeling of identification. When you start feeling that a leader or group can do no wrong, that's a signal that your critical faculties might be compromised.
How do you distinguish between healthy group belonging and problematic group psychology?
Healthy groups encourage individual thought and questioning. Problematic groups demand total agreement and see any dissent as betrayal. The key is whether you can maintain your individual judgment while participating.
Now let's get critical. What does Freud do brilliantly in this analysis?
His greatest contribution is connecting individual psychology to group behavior. He shows how unconscious processes that govern individual behavior also shape collective action.
What makes his approach distinctive from other theories about crowds?
He goes beyond describing what happens to explain why it happens. The psychoanalytic framework gives him tools to understand the unconscious motivations driving group behavior.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
Freud's analysis is heavily focused on hierarchical groups with strong leaders. He doesn't adequately address more egalitarian groups or decentralized movements that don't fit his father figure model.
That seems like a significant limitation. What else does he miss?
His examples are quite narrow, drawn mainly from military and religious contexts. Modern phenomena like consumer culture, social media networks, or grassroots movements don't map perfectly onto his framework.
How well has his analysis held up to empirical research?
Some of his insights about conformity and in-group dynamics have been supported by later research, but his specific psychoanalytic explanations are harder to test scientifically.
Are there areas where modern psychology has moved beyond or corrected his analysis?
Yes, contemporary research emphasizes cognitive biases, social identity theory, and situational factors more than unconscious family dynamics. But Freud's core insight about the emotional basis of group behavior remains valuable.
What would a reader need to seek elsewhere to get a complete picture of group psychology?
You'd want to read about social identity theory, research on conformity like Milgram's obedience studies, and work on cognitive biases in group decision-making. Freud gives you the emotional foundation, but there's much more to the story.
How honest is Freud about the limitations of his own analysis?
He's quite modest, actually. He presents his ideas as preliminary and acknowledges that he's applying individual psychology to group phenomena in ways that need further development.
Does that intellectual humility make the work more or less convincing?
I think it makes it more credible. He's not claiming to have solved the puzzle of group behavior, just offering a useful lens for understanding it.
How has this book influenced thinking about group behavior over the past century?
It established the idea that group psychology involves different mental processes than individual psychology. That insight influenced fields from political science to marketing to organizational behavior.
Can you see its influence in how we talk about modern phenomena?
Absolutely. When people discuss cult behavior, political polarization, or viral movements, they often use concepts that trace back to Freud's analysis, even if they don't realize it.
What criticism has the work received over time?
Critics argue that it's too deterministic and doesn't account for positive aspects of group behavior like social movements for justice or collective problem solving.
Has the rise of social media changed how relevant these insights are?
If anything, social media has made Freud's insights more relevant. Online environments can accelerate group formation and make regression happen faster and more intensely than he might have imagined.
What would Freud make of modern phenomena like cancel culture or viral movements?
He'd probably see them as examples of his theories in action, rapid formation of groups united by shared identification and opposition to common enemies.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing our listeners should take away from this conversation?
Understand that group psychology is not a failure of individual character, it's a normal human psychological process. Recognizing it in yourself and others is the first step to managing its effects.
So this isn't about being smarter or more rational than other people?
Not at all. It's about understanding how our minds work in social contexts. We all have psychological needs for belonging and meaning that make us susceptible to group influence.
What should someone do differently after reading this book?
Start noticing your own group identifications. Pay attention to when you feel strong emotional reactions to group dynamics, whether you're participating or observing.
That sounds like it could make social interaction pretty exhausting if you're constantly analyzing everything.
The goal isn't constant analysis. It's developing awareness that can kick in when stakes are high or when you notice your thinking becoming rigid or extreme.
Marcus, thank you for helping us understand why a century-old analysis of crowd psychology still matters for navigating our modern world.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Freud's insights remind us that understanding ourselves psychologically is essential for understanding our social and political world.